Well, everybody knows what's going to happen next, so I'll go ahead and say it. And turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It's the book of Bereshit, or Genesis, chapter 28, and verse 10. And what we had last week was the beginning of the story of Yaakov, starting with him and his brother Esau and the challenges that happened there. When we left the story, it says that, Yaakov's been told, your brother, he is really some kind of ticked off. He intends to kill you, so maybe you better head north. And by the way, don't take a wife from anywhere around here. Go take one from your father's house and up where he is now headed. And that's where the Torah portion begins in verse 10. It says, and Yaakov went out, Vayetzi Yaakov. So, and went out Jacob from Beersheba, and he went toward Haran. And en route, he is going to highlight and stop at a place. He tarried there all night because the sun had set. He took one of the stones of that place, put it under his head, and he lay down in that place to sleep. And he dreamt, and behold, he saw a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to Hashemayim, the heavens. And behold, the angels, the Malachim of Elohim, were ascending and descending upon it. And behold, Yahuwah stood beside him, and he said, Ani Yahuwah, Elohim of Abraham your father, and the Elohim of Yitzhak. The land whereon you lie, to you will I give it, and your seed. And your seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and you will spread abroad to the west, to the east, and to the north, and to the south. And in you, and in all your seed, shall all the families of the earth be blessed. So note, of course, that so far, what this is a repetition of the promises that were also given by the same God of Abraham and Isaac to both his father, his grandfather, actually, Abraham, and his father, Isaac. And it says this, and behold, I am with you, and I will keep you wheresoever you go, and I will bring you back into this land, for I will not leave you until I have done that which I have spoken to you of. So Yaakov awakened out of his sleep, and he said, surely Yahuwah is in this place, and I knew it yet not. Now, what's interesting, of course, here, that word in the Hebrew is yada, and it does mean to know experientially. In other words, to know firsthand. And I always use a reference. It's like when Adam knew his wife, Chava. He knew her intimately. He knew it experientially, firsthand. And this is describing a level of knowledge that obviously he's heard these promises before. So intellectually, he knew them. But no, it's one thing to see it and to be there and say, wow, compared to what I know now, I didn't know squat. I knew it not. So now he really, truly yadas it. And he was afraid, and he said, how full of awe is this place? This is none other than the Beit Elohim, the house of El himself, and this is the very gate of heaven. So Yaakov rose up early in the morning. He took that stone that he had put under his head, and he set it up for a pillar, and he poured oil on the top of it. And he called the name of the place Bet El. What else? The house of El. But the name of the city was called Luz at first. And now there's a lot of speculation exactly where this is. Rashi believes that Beth El is also called Har HaMoriah, or Mount Moriah. But certainly there are a number of other opinions. There's one other interesting thing, and I read a book here on this subject not long ago. Again, it cannot be proven, although certainly there is historic evidence, and there's a claim. You'll see it today, and you'll probably see it when the Antichrist gets coronated as king of England here not too long, King Charles, because this stone is also called the stone, and it has a long history, and that's kind of interesting. Again, a lot of it is speculative, can't be proven, but certainly there's a whole lot of Brits believe it, and it went essentially, or so they claim, from Jeremiah up to the British Isles, where it ended up in Ireland and Scotland, and then was in Scotland for a long, long time. Kings were coronated upon this stone, and the stone is going to be brought to, I think it's already there, supposedly, to Buckingham Palace for the coronation of Charles coming up. So the claim is that's this very same stone that they're talking about. Anyway, whether it is or not, I guess Yah knows, and most of us can't say for sure. At this point, though, it says, Yaakov vowed a vow, and he said, if Elohim will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and clothing, raiment to put on, so that I do come back to my father's house in peace, then shall Yahuwah be my El. Now notice that up until this point, he's talking in the third person. Yahuwah, he will be my El. Then this stone, which I have set up for a pillar, shall be Elohim's house. And of all that you, now he switches to the first person, or second person actually, and all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth unto you. And on that chapter 28, there's the artificial chapter break. And 29 says, Yaakov went on his journey. He came to the land of the children of the east. And he looked, and behold, here's a well. And look there, three flocks of sheep lying by it, because this is the place where they watered the flocks. And there was a great stone set up upon the well's mouth. Now, I've always heard this when I was a kid. Anyway, I remember this story as, oh, this shows you that how enamored Yaakov was of this girl he's going to meet, to where he's just able to roll this stone back that it took normal, multiple men to do. And doesn't actually say that in here, but it does tell us it was a great big rock. Okay, and here were all the flocks gathered, and they rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the sheep. That's what the English says. The Hebrew actually seems to be first person, the singular form. He rolled the stone from the well's mouth, watered the sheep, put the stone back upon the well's mouth and its place. So the point is, why would they tell us a story unless there was something interesting going on here? And that's what it looks like it is. Yaakov then says to them, hey, my brethren, whence are you? Where are you coming from, in other words? And they said, we're from Haran. Well, he said to them, hey, do you know this fellow Laban, the son of Nahor? Oh, yeah, they said, we know him. Well, then he responded, well, is it well with him? Oh, yeah, it's well. And behold, hey, look, here's Rachel, his daughter. She's coming with the sheep. And he said, lo, it's yet high day. It's not time that the cattle should be gathered together. Water you the sheep and go feed them. He said, well, we can't. We can't do that until all the flocks are gathered together. And they roll that stone from the well's mouth. That's when we water the sheep. So here's where we're getting this idea about whether it's he or they. Somebody's going to roll the stone back. While he was yet speaking with them, Rachel came up with her father's sheep, because she's the one that tended to him. Came to pass that when Yaakov saw Rachel, or Rachel in English, the daughter of Laban, her mother's brother, the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that he went near, he rolled the stone from the well's mouth, and he watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Okay, so again, the setup sounds like it's going to take a while, and he's not going to wait. He just goes up and does it. And interestingly, the implication here, and the thing that's usually pointed out, this is one of those kind of English lit things that you would see. It looks like a turnabout. Remember, the last time we saw anything happen at this very same well, it was a whole different story. It was his mom who is in fact going to come up and offer to water all of the camels from the servant. And here it's Yaakov returning, same place, and now the sex roles are reversed. He is going to water Rachel's sheep. And it says he kissed Rachel, lifted up his voice, and wept. And whenever we read this, I'll admit, I look at this and I say, wow, why? It's an interesting kind of a bittersweet thing. Maybe it's prophetic. Certainly there are going to be challenges and things that are going to happen for both joy and blessing, and of course very, very great tragedy later on with this woman. Yaakov, though, told Rachel that he was her father's brother and that he was Rivka's son. She ran and told her dad. And it came to pass that when Laban heard the tidings of Yaakov, his sister's son, then he ran to meet him, embraced him, kissed him, brought him into the house, and he told Laban all of these things. And then Laban said to him, well, surely you are bone, and my bone and my flesh. And so they abode with him. He stayed there for a month. And at this point, Laban says to Yaakov, well, look, because you're my brother, should you therefore serve me for nothing? You got to have something happening here. So tell me, what should your wages be? Now, Laban had two daughters, it tells us, as if this is going to be important to what's following, and it is. Laban had two daughters. The name of the oldest one was Leah. The name of the younger was, as we've already seen, Rachel. So she's younger than Leah. It says, Leah was, some English versions say her eyes were weak. I don't necessarily like that translation. Sounds like maybe tender-eyed is a better way to put it. But Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel, on the other hand, she sounds like she was a knockout. She was of beautiful form and fair to look upon. And Yaakov loved Rachel, and he said, I'll serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. Well, says Laban, it's better I give her to you than I should give her to some other guy. So, yeah, stay on here. And Yaakov served him for 7 years for Rachel. They seemed to him just a few days because of the love that he had for her. So he is smitten, as they would say. And finally the time comes, Yaakov says to Laban, give me my wife, because my days have been fulfilled, that I may go into her. Literally the word here is to take her to consummate the marriage. So Laban got all the men of the place together. They made a big feast. And it came to pass in the morning that he took, in the evening. So here's that same evening. After this big feast and ceremony, he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to him, and he went into her. What? Okay, now, this is another one of those places. We'll pause just for a second here, because everybody that reads the story says, wow, come on, what's going on here? He took the wrong one? Obviously, he has not, he doesn't have an intimate knowledge of her yet, or Leah, either one. So maybe you could say he could be excused for not knowing that, but he doesn't get a look at her, or the light's out, okay, even if that's true. What's going on? Well, there's people that suggest, and I don't necessarily buy this, that Yaakov was drunk. If he's that drunk, how do they know that anything even happened? But in any case, for whatever reason and however it took place, he was fooled. At least it sounds like he was fooled. Maybe he knew what was happening and he just basically said, okay, well, what the heck? We don't know. But there is no shortage of ambiguity in the story here. And Laban, it says, gave Zilpah, his handmaid, unto his daughter Leah, to be her handmaid. So Laban has... Now, some of the Midrash, and I tend to think this is pretty reasonable, Laban almost certainly had a wife that was a concubine, and in all likelihood, these two girls that are going to be the handmaids of his two daughters are also his daughters by a different mother. So it's likely that they're half-sisters, but we don't know that for sure, but that is exactly what most of the traditions suggest, and certainly what the history would suggest, too. But again, we don't build doctrine on that, but what's interesting to me about it is, well, it does demonstrate that there is a family connection here through these girls, if true. That also is going to percolate through the 12 tribes. Okay, came to pass in the morning. Oh, shazam, looky there. It turns out to be Leah. And Yaakov says to Laban, what have you done to me? Didn't I serve with you for Rachel? Why have you therefore beguiled me? You tricked me. Well, says Laban, it's not done so in our place to give the younger before the firstborn. Now, interesting, too, because there is a lot of Midrash on this subject. I don't necessarily, again, tend to buy it, but the... one of the claims that you'll hear the rabbis make is, oh, see, Leah was supposed to be for the elder brother, that would be Esau. Raquel was supposed to be his, but when he took and usurped Esau's place, this is what you get. Well, and as support for that, they'll point to this verse where Laban seems to recognize, look, you know, it may be that way down where you come from, boy, but that's not how we do it up here, to give the younger before the firstborn. So is it a little verbal slap in the face? It's not clear. But again, it's one of those interesting things in the story. There are a number of such here, as you might suspect. Okay, so he says, fulfill the week of this one. Okay, take a week, give Leah your best for a week, and at the end of that time, I'll give you the other, in other words, Raquel. Oh, and by the way, going to take another 7 years at this point. Just serve me for another 7 years. So he basically has got 7 years plus seven for the two daughters. Well, Yaakov did so. He fulfilled the week. So he didn't have to wait seven more years. He waited another week, and then he gets Rachel, his daughter, to wife. And at this point, Laban gives to Rachel his another of his daughters, Bilhah, as a handmaid to be for Raquel. And he went in also unto Raquel. So he consummates the relationship with Raquel. And here is one of the more fateful lines in the book. It's going to percolate as well throughout not just the family here, but literally through generations and throughout history. There is favoritism taking place. And you can imagine why. I mean, I guess it might be natural for there to be some resentment. Hey, Leah, you lied to me. Well, you know, I had to. You can imagine the conversations that did or didn't take place. But for whatever reason, and it's been laid out for us, really, he is, no doubt about it, he has a greater care for Raquel. and that is going to show up. He is definitely going to show favorites. He loved Rachel more than Leah. He served with him that other 7 years. Now, Yahuwah saw that Leah was hated. Now, is it really hated? As you know, sometimes the Bible uses the word to make a relative point. And compared with how his feelings were for Raquel, she was hated by comparison. But maybe she really was she certainly wasn't cared for as much. And this looks like an indictment. As a result, it says, he opened her womb, Leah's womb, but Raquel was barren. Now, obviously, he didn't hate her so much that he didn't occasionally sleep with her, because she does, in fact, have children. It says Leah conceived. Next verse. She bore a son, and she called his name Reu-ben, because Yahuwah looked upon my affliction, and now, she says, now my husband will love me. So essentially, Reu, see or behold, look, a son, Ben. See a son. Because Yahuwah looked upon my affliction. And now she says, maybe my husband will love me. Now, I'm going to make an observation here as we go through the next few verses. Notice that the names of all of these sons all reflect Leah's feeling like she's second class and not loved. They all have to do with the fact that she wishes she had a real husband who would at least love her like he does her sister. And then she conceives again. She bore another son. She said, because Yahuwah has heard that I am hated, he's therefore given me this son also. And she called his name. The root word here is obvious. It's Shema, from, to hear and obey, hearken. She called his name Shimeon, or Shimon. Then she bore a third time. She had another son. She said, now this time, now will my husband be joined unto me. And that word is Levu. Recognize the root there, same root as the name of the boy, Levi. Because I've borne him three sons. So his name was called Levi, or to join. Then she conceived again, and she bore another son. She said, now this time I will praise Yahuwah. And therefore she called his name Yahudah. And she took a break at this point. She left off from bearing for a little while. Turns out it's not going to be forever, as we're going to see in the next chapter. Now, Raquel, she sees that she has not had any children for Yaakov. I'm sure they've tried, but at this point, Raquel envies her sister. She said to Jacob, now, you got to give me children, or I'll just plain die. That kindled Yaakov's anger against her. He said, look, am I in the place of Yah? Because he's the one that has withheld from you the fruit of the womb. And let me add one more little aside here, because you got to wonder, and I'm sure that they wondered. By this time, I can't help but think probably Yaakov knows. While he was consummating the marriage with Leah, where was Raquel? Did they lock her up? Did they tie her up? Did she not holler out, say, hey, sweetheart, I know I'm over here? You know, it's there will be questions like that. And by this time, they've probably been answered. Maybe that has something to do with the anger here. Again, I don't know, but it's almost impossible to read the story without at least thinking along those lines. So she says, look, my maid, Bilhah, why don't you go in and consummate a relationship with her? You take her to be your wife so she may bear upon my knees. So this can be kind of like a surrogate. I will be built up through her. So Raquel gave him Bilhah, her handmaid, to be his wife, Laisha. And Yaakov, he did as he was said to. He went in, consummated a relationship with Bilhah. And she then conceives. She bore Yaakov a son. And Raquel, at this point, is the one that's going to name the boy. She says, Elohim has judged me. Oh, we know the root there. Judge is Don, right? And he's heard my voice. He has given me a son. So she called his name Don, or Dan in English. And meanwhile, here comes another one. Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, conceived again. She bore Yaakov a second son. Notice we get these boys kind of in a sequence. Raquel said, with mighty wrestlings, I have wrestled with my sister and have prevailed. So she called his name from the root word there, Naphtali. And then when Leah saw that she hasn't had any more children, and meanwhile Bilhah is going to town, she took Zilpah, her handmaid, and said, hey, that'll work my way too. She gave her to Jacob to be his fourth wife. And Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, then bore Yaakov a son. And Leah, notice she is also going to be the one to name this son. She says, fortune is come, or a troop is the King James version. And that root word there is God, G-A-D. So she called his name God. And Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, bore Yaakov a second son. So she too has two in a row. Happy am I, she said, Asher, right? Ashrei, happy am I. For the daughters will call me Happy. And she called his name Happy. No, Asher. And Reuben went in the days of the wheat harvest, and he found mandrakes in the field. So it sounds like Reuben at this point, obviously we've got a number of children that have been born. He's several years old. He found mandrakes out in the field, brought them to his mom, Leah. And Rachel says to Leah, hey, give me, I pray you, those mandrakes that your son got. And she says, why? Is this a small matter that you've taken away my husband? Do you want my son's mandrakes too? Well, says Rachel, therefore he will lie with you tonight in exchange for your son's mandrakes. Now, one other thing I think is kind of fascinating about this, because there are no less than two places in this Torah portion we have things going on concerning conception. And, you know, people ask, well, what's with mandrakes? This is some kind of an aphrodisiac. What is the deal here? But wait a minute. When we get to the place where we're going to see the sheep and the flocks that are born unto Laban, and then Jacob is going to have some of them, he does something strange with some pieces of wood. And he strips them and he puts them in front of the sheep where they're at the watering trough. And that, too, affects their fertility and what comes out. It's kind of fascinating. And to my recollection, this is one of the few places in Scripture where we see things like this, where we don't get an explanation of exactly what's going on or how it works, but something clearly has to do with conception. And here it is. So something to do with the mandrakes. Okay. Rachel says, he will lie with you in exchange for your son's mandrakes. So here comes Yaakov in from the field in the evening. Leah went out to meet him, and she says, oh, hey, hon, you better come in to me, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, because I have hired you for my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night, and there you go, surprise. Yaakov, Elohim hearkened unto Leah. She conceived, and at this point, she bears Jacob yet a fifth son. And here she says, Elohim has given me my hire because I gave my handmaid to my husband. So to take away, to carry, to hire, Issachar is the root word there in the Hebrew. So that is the name of this son. Leah conceived again. And finally, she bears a sixth son to Yaakov. And this time she says, Elohim has endowed me, Zabdani, with a good dowry. So maybe now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons. So his name, Zebulun. After that, she finally bore a daughter. Her name, as we probably recall, is Dinah. And now, finally, it says, Elohim remembered. He's Zakar. He brought to mind Rachel. And he hearkened unto her, and he finally opened her womb. And she conceived. This time she bears a son. And she says, literally, Elohim has gathered up Yosef. He has taken away, gathered up, my reproach. So she called his name Yosef, saying, Yahuwah, add to me, increase to me another son. So this is kind of fascinating. By the way, there is another, this idea of Elohim has taken away my reproach. That's the first time we see this word used in there for reproach, and it has to do with karpa, reproach or shame. And we also see that one used in Isaiah chapter 4, verse 1, where there's a reference to taking away my reproach, similarly, shame. And that's part of the reason why it's suggested that this has to do with being barren. And whatever was happening with Rachel, at this point she feels like he has taken away, he has gathered the reproach, gathered it up, and going to name the son after that, Joseph. Came to pass then, when Rachel had born Joseph, that Yaakov says to Laban, all right, now send me away so I can go back to my own place and my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me go, because you know my service wherewith I have served you. So he's basically saying, okay, 14 years are up. It's time. I need to head out. Laban says to him, well, look, if I have now found favor in your sight, I've observed the signs. Yahuwah has blessed me for your sake. So Laban is not dumb. He can see that having this guy here and his sons has been a good thing for his fortunes. So he says, anoint for me your wages. You tell me what it is you want. Point it out, and I will give it to you. Well, he says to him, you know how I've served you, how well your cattle have done under my tutor, my stewardship. Because when I came, you didn't have very much. But now it has increased abundantly, and Yahuwah has blessed you whithersoever I turn. So wherever I go, it works out well for you. Not by your trickery. It's not by your own efforts, in other words, that all this has happened. It's the things that I have been doing for you. And now, how am I going to be able to provide for my own house too? Well, he says, what shall I give you? Okay, says Yaakov, look, here is, you're not going to give me anything. Let's just understand this up front. If you'll do this one thing for me, I will again feed your flock and keep it. So he is basically proposing what you might call a partnership arrangement. Here we go. I'll pass through all the flock today. I'll take away from there every speckled and spotted one, every dark one among the sheep, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and that will be my hire. And I suspect by this time, before he agrees, Laban probably goes out and checks and counts. See how many are spotted and speckled, and well, that's going to be for Yaakov. So shall my righteousness witness against me hereafter. Whenever you come to look over my hire that's before you, every one that is not speckled and spotted among the goats or that's dark among the sheep, if it's found with me, you can say that it's been stolen. First use of that word, which is ganuv. Well, says Laban, behold, that sounds okay, so be it according to your word. And he went, and he removed that day the he-goats that were streaked and spotted, and all the she-goats that were speckled and spotted, every one that had white in it, all the dark ones among the sheep, and he gave them into the hand of his sons. And then he set 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob, and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. Now, here comes this other reference to, is it an aphrodisiac, a fertility aid? Again, it's not clear. I have never seen a good explanation of either of these as to what's going on here. I don't know that we necessarily have one. I'm sure there's no shortage of speculation. But here we go. Jacob took some rods of poplar and of the almond and the plane tree, and he peeled white streaks in them, making the white appear which was in the rod. So you've got a darker bark, it sounds like, and he peels that away, exposing the white inner part of the wood. And he set the rods, which he'd peeled, over against the flocks in the gutters in the watering trough. So the places where the flocks are going to go water, he puts these rods up. So when they came to drink, they conceived. When they came to drink. And the flocks conceived at the sight of the rods. And guess what? They brought forth speckled and streaked and spotted. And Jacob separated the lambs. He also set the faces of the flocks towards the streak and all the dark in the flock of Laban. Put his own droves apart, and he did not put them into Laban's flock. So basically, he has done something, and the birth colorings of the sheep and the flocks have changed dramatically as a result. So, whenever the flocks were feeble, in other words, those are not going to be the great offspring, he didn't put them in. So the feeble ones ended up belonging to Laban, and the stronger part of the flock became Jacob's. And he increased mightily, exceedingly. He had large flocks, maidservants and men servants, and camels and asses. And finally, the next chapter says, then eventually he heard Laban's sons, and they were muttering, saying, Yaakov has taken away everything that was our father's. All of that which is our father's, he's gotten all that wealth. So Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban. Behold, it wasn't quite like it was before. Now Laban seems to be upset with him. So Yahuwah finally says unto Yaakov, return unto the land of your fathers and to your kin. Now that word, right? Shuv. Shuv, go back to the land of your fathers and your kin, and I will be with you. So Yaakov called. He got a hold of Rachel and Leah, and he called his into the field with his flock, and he said to them, I've been checking out your dad's countenance. It's just not the same as it was. But Yahuwah Elohim of my father has been with me all this time. So you know that with all my power I have in fact served your father. Your father, in fact, has mocked me, though. He has changed my wages now 10 times. But Elohim suffered him not to hurt me. So you can kind of speculate what is implied here. Changed my wages 10 times. So Laban sees that there's a whole lot more of the better sheep that are being born in accord with whatever it was they'd agreed would be his sheep and the other sheep. And so he says, okay, from here on out, I want the speckled and spotted, or I want the black ones or the white ones, or whatever it is, they've changed. And I imagine that means what happens is Yaakov goes out and gets himself some different sticks or whatever. But ultimately, when he changes the wages, the distribution of the coloring of the sheep changes too. Amazing. He said it this way. If he said, in other words, he's telling the daughters this. If he said, the speckled will be your wages, well, then all the flock bore speckled. If he said, hey, it's the streaked that'll be your wages, well, then all the flock bore streaked. Elohim has thus taken away the cattle of your father, and he's given them to me. And it came to pass at the time that the flock conceived, I lift up my eyes in a dream, and behold, the he-goats which leaped upon the flock were streaked and speckled and grizzled. And the Malak, the messenger, the angel of Elohim, said unto me in the dream, Yaakov, and I said, right, we know the answer, Hineni, here I am. He said, lift up your eyes now and see all the he-goats which leap upon the flock are streaked, speckled, and grizzled. For I've seen all that Laban has done to you. Ani, or in this case, it's Anki Ha'el Beit El. Anki Ha'el. I am the El of Beit El, where you put that pillar, where you did vow that vow unto me. So arise, get yourself out of this land, and shuv, go back to the land of your nativity. So Rachel and Leah answered, and they said, look, is there yet anything, any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Haven't we kind of been to him as if we were strangers? Because he has sold us, and he has quite devoured our price. For all the riches which Elohim has taken away from our father, well, that's now ours and our children's. So then, they say, whatever it is that Elohim has said to you, do it. So Yaakov rose up, he set his sons and his wives upon the camels, and he carried away all of the stuff that he had accumulated, all the cattle, all of his substance he'd gathered, the cattle of his getting, which he'd gathered in Paddan Aram, and headed back, ready to go to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. Now, Laban, he is out meanwhile looking to shear his sheep. And while this is going on, it says, Rachel, this turns out to be a bad mistake, Rachel stole the teraphim, the idols that belonged to her father. And here is a place where there's a slight difference in the translation. It says, Yaakov outwitted Laban the Aramean. And I think another rendering that probably makes at least as much sense is, no, Yaakov stole away unaware from Laban the Aramean, in that he did not tell him where he fled. So he fled with all that he had. He rose up. He passed over the river. He set his face toward the mountain of Gilead, and he headed him on up and moved him out. And meanwhile, it was told to Laban on the third day that Yaakov had gone. So 3 days later, on the third day, he figures out what's happened. Yaakov and his daughters and all their stuff has gone. So he took his brethren with him. He pursued him. 7 days' journey. It took him an extra several days to catch up. And he overtook him in the mountain of Gilead. And Elohim, as he's getting ready to overtake him, came to Laban the Aramean in a dream of the night. And he said to him, take heed to yourself. Make sure you do not speak to Yaakov either good or bad. Maintain a neutral attitude is kind of how this seems to net out. So Laban finally came up with Jacob. And it says, now Yaakov at this point had pitched his tent in the mountain. Laban with his brethren pitched in the mountain of Gilead. Behar ha-Gilead. And Laban said to Yaakov, what have you done that you have outwitted me, carried away my daughters as though they were captives of the sword, as if they didn't go with him willingly? Now, why did you flee away secretly and steal away or kidnap? He's implying, you know, that you did this not just surreptitiously, but with malice, maybe. You didn't tell me, so that I might have sent you away with mirth, with songs. Hey, we'd have had a big old setting out party, right? Tabret and harp. And you didn't even allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now, this was a foolish thing that you've done. It is, in fact, in my power to hurt you here and teach you a little lesson. But the Elohim of your fathers spoke to me last night, and he said the following, take heed to yourself, you do not speak of Jacob, either good or bad. And that part is, he's repeating exactly what Scripture says. Now that you've surely gone, because you long for your father's house, okay, he understands this part. Okay, you want to get home, I get that. But why have you stolen my El, my gods, my fake gods, my little idols? Well, says Jacob to Laban, because I was afraid. Now, he's not answering the question that was asked last. He's answering the first part. Because I was afraid, because I thought to myself, lest you should take my daughters from your daughters from me by force. They're my wives, they're your daughters. I was afraid you'd take them back by force. And so, as for those idols, with whomever you find your gods, he shall not live. before our brethren discern you what is mine with you and take it to you. So he basically has given him permission to conduct a search. And it says, and here is the fateful verse, for Jacob didn't know that it was Rachel that had stolen them. That word now has appeared twice in this Torah portion, stolen. Now notice, I always read this, and I think this is a little bit of Markology, but I think I can make a pretty clear scriptural connection here. This sounds like Jacob has, with his own prophetic lips, sealed Rachel's fate. And that's a real shame. It's a warning to husbands, to wives, to all of us, but especially to those that are in a position of having to do with vows, to be very, very careful about our words. With whoever you find them, he shall not live. Now, notice, he didn't even find them. But it sure looks at this point like Yaakov, with the words out of his mouth, has sentenced his beloved wife Rachel to die. He didn't know she'd taken him. So Laban went into Yaakov's tent. He went into Leah's tent. He went into the tent of the two maidservants. He didn't find any of them. Finally, he went out of Leah's tent, and he entered into Rachel's tent. Now, Rachel, in fact, had taken the teraphim. It's already told us this before, but it repeats it. In this case, she put them in the saddle of her camel, and she sits upon them. So Laban felt all over the tent, but he couldn't find them because they weren't there. Then she said to her father, "Hey, let not my lord be angry. I'm not going to get down off this camel here because, you know, it's the manner of women that is upon me." In other words, it's my time of the month. I hope you understand, Dad. He searched, but he didn't find the teraphim. Now, Jacob, meanwhile, he is some kind of upset. He strove with Laban, and he says, basically, what's going on here? You know, you didn't find him. Yaakov answered, and he says to Laban, "What is my trespass? What's my sin that you have so hotly pursued after me? And now you've felt through all my stuff. What have you found there with all my household stuff? Any of your stuff in there? Set it here before my brethren and your brethren so that they can judge between us. You show us. What did you find in your search? 20 years have I been with you. The ewes, your she-goats have not cast their young. The rams of your flock, I haven't eaten them. That which was torn of beasts, I didn't bring it to you. I absorbed the loss. My hand, you still required it. And whether it was stolen by day or stolen by night, I was one that took all of the hits, essentially. So thus I was. In the day, the drought consumed me, and in the night, it was the frost, and sleep fled from before my eyes. I've had a rough 20 years taking care of your flocks, and here you are basically doing this. 20 years have I been in your house. I've served you for 14 years for your first two daughters, 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages." He repeats it again. He's already told the wives this. 10 times. "If it hadn't been for the Elohim of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac, if he hadn't been on my side, surely by now you'd have sent me away empty-handed. Elohim has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands, and he gave judgment last night." "Well," says Laban unto Yaakov, "the daughters are my daughters. The children are my children. The flocks are my flocks." You get the pattern here? I've got these highlighted in my teaching Bible. My daughters, my children, my flocks, mine. All that you see, it's mine. And, you know, this sounds kind of petulant. This is a guy that's really got a case of it, right? All of these are mine. Everything you see is mine. "What can I do this day for these my daughters or for their children whom they have borne?" So, hey, okay, remember what Elohim told me? Are we pushing the line a bit? Yeah, maybe so. So let's make a covenant between me and you, and let it be for a witness between me and you. So Jacob went and got himself another stone. He set it up for a pillar. And he said to his brethren, "You all get some stones too." They took stones. They made a heap. And there they ate by the heap. Now Laban called the place Yegar Sahaduta, but Yaakov called it Galid, or Galid. Okay, and that one's interesting. Gal, heap, ed, witness. Galid, heap of witness. That makes pretty clear sense. Said Laban, "This heap is now witness between me and you of this day." So it was called Galid. And Mitzpah, because he also said, "Yahuwah watch between me and you for when we are absent from one another. And if you afflict my daughters," okay, you better be real careful, "you afflict my daughters, if you take any additional wives beside my daughters, No man being with us, see, Elohim is a witness between me and you. Now, this is another one of those interesting places, and certainly I suspect the sages would cite this as a another witness that, yeah, the other two girls, Zilpah and Bilhah, are probably his daughters as well, because he says, if you take any other wives besides my daughters. And it kind of includes as if the four that he's already got are all his daughters. And by the way, that's kind of what he said. The daughters are my daughters. Children are my children. Notice, it does sound like they are, in fact, his flesh and bone. He's said this now twice in less than one chapter. Laban then says to Jacob, behold, this heap, this pillar which I've set up between me and you, this heap be a witness. The pillar will be a witness. I won't pass over this heap to your side. You don't pass over this heap to me. To do harm. The Elohim of Abraham and the Elohim of Nahor, the God of their father, judge betwixt us. And Yahuwah, and Jacob rather, swore by the fear of his father Yitzhak. And at this point, Yaakov offered a sacrifice, a zebak, there in the mountain. He called his brethren to go eat bread, and they did. They ate bread, and they tarried all night on the mountain. Now, we're almost to the end of the Torah portion, and it ends this way. And it's kind of a, I guess you'd say, a poignant ending, and it certainly reflects, if you will, a story. It kind of wraps up Laban in a almost a sad way. Got up early in the morning. Laban rose up. He kissed his sons and his daughters, and he blessed them. And Laban departed. And it says, he returned unto his place. He made shuv. He shuved limkamo. Okay, anyway, he went back to his own place. Now, is it physical? Or in fact, is it spiritual? And I think the Midrash suggests it's true on more than one level. He went back to where he was before. He didn't just go back home physically. He went back to the same place that he had been spiritually before, 20 years prior to this, Yaakov came into his life. So after all of that, he has kind of regressed to the old Laban, the money grubber and the mine kind of guy. Meanwhile, Yaakov went on his way, and the Malachim of Elohim met him. And when he saw him, Jacob said, this is God's camp. And he called the name of that place Mahanaim. Two camps. Mahanaim. And with that, the Torah portion ends. And what we're going to see is a reuniting next time with his brother. And another major part of the climax of the story here.